May it please the court. I'm Tom Thornhill. I represent an entity by the name of Harry Om. It's an LLC that was formed in Louisiana, and it is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This case I submit to you is about the public records doctrine. This court has recognized in the matter of Zedda, Z-E-D-D-A, a 1997 case, for which I'll give you the site because I don't think it's in our brief, 103 Fed 3rd, 1195.
That debtor's in position.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. What's the name of the case?
Matter of Zedda or Zedda, Z-E-D-D-A.
Okay.
Do you need the site again, Judge Davis? Do you want me to give you the site?
No, I got the site. I just didn't get the name.
Okay, good. Yes, sir. That case from this court recognized that debtors in possession or trustees are third parties with respect to claims of creditors. And in this unique case, the bankruptcy judge in New Orleans decided issues that we submit are governed by the public records doctrine. The case I submit to you in my review of the documents is not nearly as complex as the judge thought. He thought this was a res nova issue under the Multiple Indebtedness Mortgage Act that has been adopted more recently in Louisiana than our typical civil code rules. The issue then that is raised is whether or not a mortgage that's of record in St. Tammany Parish, just across the lake, can be changed by documents that are not of record. In this case, this is not an analysis of issues with respect to the debtor and the bank in non-third party, if you will, non-public record doctrine analyses. Put differently, this is not a matter of whether or not the debtor goes to the bank and borrows additional money that is secured by the multiple indebtedness mortgage. This debtor that's in Chapter 11 had as security for its debt its property, which is a motel, hotel in Slidell. This particular gentleman that owns the hotel company that owns Harry Om has multiple interests in multiple hotels across the South. One which he owns is in Hattiesburg. He owns that through a separate company, a Mississippi company called Mississippi Hospitality LLC. If one looks at the public records in St. Tammany, one will not see any reference to Mississippi Hospitality LLC, and it will not see any reference to any documents that say the debts of Mississippi Hospitality LLC are secured by debts of Harry Om LLC. Now, as it turns out, the guarantor of the debt for both the hotels, Mr. Sam Beulah, lives in Slidell, is a gentleman who also has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy relief. So uniquely in this case, he is a third party to all of these things because under Bankruptcy Code Article 544, anyone who is the trustee or the debtor in possession stands as a third party, meaning that all of the assets owned by those persons in bankruptcy are marshaled according to the public records doctrine's issues. What is the rub? I always like to say in these cases, the rub is that there is equity in the hotel. And the hotel in Slidell has approximately $500,000 in equity. That is the asset that would essentially be marshaled separate and apart from creditors' claims. In addition to the first mortgage by First Guarantee Bank, there is a second mortgage by the SBA. It is also a third party. The SBA in this matter took the position that its debtor-creditor relationship, which is secured by a recorded mortgage, cannot be made inferior to advances to the Mississippi company, which are not secured on the public records by the Slidell LLC.
Were they paid off? Was that SBA loan paid off?
It was not paid off, Your Honor. Judge Clement is still there. Say it again, I'm sorry.
They're not before us. There's no one representing them.
The U.S. Attorney, Mr. Glenn Schreiber, appeared in the bankruptcy court. Quite frankly, I thought maybe they had filed something here. If they didn't, my apologies on their behalf. But they did make a record that they obviously did not seek to have the interest of we the people, the government, impinged by the recognition of a mortgage interest held by First Guaranty Bank superior to the mortgage interest of the government. All of those issues, the amounts of that mortgage are uncontested. The issues here I submit to you are not unique and they're not novel. And I appreciate Judge Brown's approach to this. We had long and extensive conversations about the law under collateral mortgages and the law under the multiple indebtedness mortgage. But there's nothing that is truly unique about the scope of the rules with multiple indebtedness mortgage I submit to you if one simply looks at the rules and the commentaries as they were passed. There's nothing in multiple indebtedness mortgage that changes the provisions of Civil Code Article 3295 that specifically addresses how one makes a mortgage on his property to secure the debts of a third party. In common parlance, ignoring some of these issues, what was the document that makes for this argument by First Guaranty Bank? How is it that it can say that the $4 million it loaned to a Mississippi company is secured by the Slidell LLC? There's nothing in the public records. There's nothing that would affect the rights of a third party, the debtor in possession, or the SBA, or the third party, Mr. Beulah. So how is it that they come and make the argument that they're entitled to security? They point to an unrecorded, unauthentic document which they drafted and styled called an acknowledgement of a multiple indebtedness mortgage. That document does not speak to be a promise to pay. It is not a note. It is not a guarantee. It is not a surety. It is not anything other than a newly created document that I've never seen before, the judge had never seen before, and yet he looked at it just as I did, as if it had some merit.
Just signed by one party?
It was signed only by Harry Ahm. Now, the issue became first, was there a resolution? Well, the argument made by the bank was that there was a resolution. The resolution is not recorded. The resolution does not refer to the acknowledgement of a multiple indebtedness mortgage. So, with respect to third parties, I submit that the issue is very simple. If you don't have a document that creates a suretyship arrangement or a guarantee that is in authentic form or in acknowledged authentic form, according to the law in Louisiana, very clearly the Civil Code says that, one doesn't have a suretyship. So there is no personal obligation to pay the debt of a third party unless first it's in writing and it very clearly says that the person promises to pay. There's nothing in the acknowledgement that says Harry Ahm promises to pay. Now, Judge Brown said, well, there is in the waiver section of this document that really speaks to the mortgages a sentence that says that there would be a solidary obligation owed by Harry Ahm for others. No reference to Harry Ahm and multiple indebtedness mortgage vis-a-vis the Mississippi hospitality debt. In that document, there are defined terms, and defined terms do speak to the borrower being the Mississippi company. But when you look at the document, you have to be confused. First, it's not a personal obligation because there's no promise to pay. And second, it's not a mortgage. It's not an amendment of the mortgage that's of record, the one in St. Tammany. It's not in any way a creation of a security device called a pledge or a suretyship, because none of it is authentic, and none of it has any bearing upon that which would be the assets of Harry Ahm, because it's not recorded. It can't affect third parties. So from
let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
The mortgage on the Slidell Motel define the secured indebtedness to include both the note where they borrowed the money to buy that hotel and future indebtedness.
It does. And
so why wouldn't that then? That would bind the PC in the Mississippi loan, would it not? In other words, that would mean that the Slidell Motel would also secure the Mississippi loan.
No, sir, and I think that's where the confusion comes in.
Why wouldn't it?
Because the law is very clear. If you look at the law, it says that the prospect of using either a collateral mortgage package or a multiple indebtedness mortgage to secure future debts is certainly something that is typically included in a mortgage. But the promise to pay the debt of a third party, on the other hand, is a completely different relationship. Look, for instance, with me, if you would, at these two sentences, which I suggest to you very clearly under 3295 of our civil code, which is mortgage securing another's obligation. This is what the law says very clearly. If the mortgagor also guarantees the debts of another, that guarantee will constitute a suretyship and be so regulated. The rules on suretyship are very, very simple. One must have an authentic act or an act under an acknowledged act, and in this case, 3038, regulating suretyship, was not complied with. Even if one were to assume, which I submit to you, the law says one cannot assume a suretyship is different from a mortgage. If you look at the definitions of suretyship and mortgage, for instance, under suretyship, the law says suretyship and mortgage are separate and distinct obligations. And I'm reading from comment C under 3038 on suretyship. Now, could there be an in rem obligation owed? And this is quite frankly what I thought First Guarantee would argue. That issue, also discussed in the second sentence of this subparagraph A on 3295, very clearly says, a question may be present in such a case as to whether the mortgage secures the promise of the surety or of the principal obligor, the Mississippi Company, but that is a matter of contract law, looking back to the contract to which you read from, to be determined by the intention of the parties expressed in their agreements. Now, the push from First Guarantee is that the intent is changed in the acknowledgement document. In the unrecorded acknowledgement document, it says the intent is changed because it says the intent, parole evidence, is now recognized by Harry Alm. And here's the language it used, reaffirmed. Harry Alm could not, it is simply impossible, it could not reaffirm a debt that did not exist in 2005 when the mortgage was recorded. We know that Mississippi Hospitality didn't exist in 2005. We know that the debt didn't exist in 2005.
Couldn't they agree to secure all future indebtedness?
Of Harry Alm.
Right, and Harry Alm is a guarantor on that Mississippi note, isn't it?
It is not.
It's not?
It is not, and that's the problem. That, Judge Davis, is the very thing I looked for first. Was there a guarantee or suretyship? Guarantee is governed by the rules of suretyship. There is no guarantee by Harry Alm on that debt. Mr. Beulah, another third party here, did guarantee that debt, and the logic of the court below was, well, you know, Mr. Beulah owns both companies, and so maybe, you know, Mr. Beulah. Harry Alm didn't guarantee the debt. Now, there's language in unrecorded documents. I suppose someone could talk about and argue about, but it is impossible to have an intent that is reaffirmed if it didn't exist at the time. And I submit to you, without a co-signature, a promise to pay, without a guarantee, a suretyship, or a clear suretyship, those obligations are not in personam for Harry Alm. Are they in rem? Obviously not if they're not a mortgage or recorded. So in my view, notwithstanding the fact that one can argue that the multiple indebtedness mortgage law changes the mortgage law, the comments say no, that's not correct, it doesn't. The only thing that the multiple indebtedness mortgage law gives us that's new, separate from the collateral mortgage package we all have known for many, many years, which incidentally was not rescinded, the only thing new in the multiple indebtedness mortgage is it says that you can now record a document that has no debt referenced in it and create the debt in the future. But you can't create a promise to pay the debt of a third person unless it's in writing. And in this case, we all know that the rules are public records doctrine's rules. I think I'm out of time, so I'm going to sit down.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thornhill. You reserved rebuttal time.
I did. Thank you.
All right. We'll hear from First Guaranty Bank. Mr. Coudrain.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Andre Coudrain. I represent the Appalachian First Guaranty Bank. Let me first briefly address the public records document argument. It's the mortgage that's recorded a public record, properly recorded, that places all third parties, the SBA, the bankruptcy trustee, and all others, that this Slidell property is security for all loans that exist now, loans in the future, not only to the mortgagor, but to other third parties with whom the mortgagor is obligated on a joint and several or in Slido basis. So
yeah, but how could SBA can't find out what those debts are, though, on the public records, can it?
Well, no, sir, but that's the danger, and that's pointed out by Mr. Walenzik in his law review article. What happens in the real world, Judge, is banks put these multiple indebtedness mortgages, these future advance mortgages of public record, and they have a cap. In this case, it's $50 million. It's a large cap. Other banks who are interested in lending money on this property know that, hey, I've got to deal with a first mortgage holder. What happens is if there's another bank wanting to lend money, they will contact the first lender and say, First Guaranty Bank, Harry Alm has applied to the SBA for a loan for this property. And the SBA would then ask First Guaranty Bank, would you agree to cap the amount secured under your first mortgage to allow the SBA to come behind that capped amount? That did not happen in this case. Mr. Walenzik points that out in his law review article. That's how the real world operates. They did not do that. The way the second mortgage holders are protected is to go to the first mortgage holder, get an intercreditor agreement or a standstill agreement that says we will agree, First Guaranty, to cap our mortgage to a certain amount. That was not done, Judge, and that's the way it happens in the world.
So you can't go to the public records. You've got to make a phone call to the first mortgage lender and to find out how large the debt is.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Is that the way it works under a collateral mortgage situation?
Yes, sir. It's the same. I graduated from law school when the collateral mortgage was still done and closed a bunch of loans. The multiple indebtedness mortgage is intended to bring simplicity to the process. We had to explain why you had a collateral mortgage note and a collateral mortgage and a collateral pledge agreement, and the interest rates didn't match up and the amounts didn't match up. So the legislature came in, as again Mr. Walenzik points out, and simplified all this. That was the purpose of the revision in the law, allowing these future advance mortgages, these multiple indebtedness mortgages. So, Your Honor, we simply asked the court to please review the records, review the documents that the parties bargained for. And what First Guaranty Bank bargained for was a mortgage position on this Slidell property, securing advances to Harry Alm and secured by any other debt with which Harry Alm is obligated on a joint and several and solidary basis. So the mortgage, recorded of public record, contemplates future advances. It's the acknowledgement that closes the loop, that completes the circle, that the obligation of Harry Alm, joint and several and in Salida with Mississippi Hospitality on the Mississippi Hospitality note.
How would the SBA know about that?
Judge, they know about it because the multiple indebtedness mortgage contemplates future advances, and that's how they know.
They filed, as I understood it, the SBA filed an unopposed motion to intervene below, and in their intervention agreed with the position of Harry Alm that this wasn't covered. So, I mean, how do we square that?
Judge, it is covered. I mean, the multiple indebtedness mortgage is what covers it.
I am correct in what I just said. Did they file an unopposed intervention below and in the motion to intervene agree with the position taken by Harry
Yes,
Alm?
Yes, they did.
All right, so why would they agree with that position if they knew? I mean, I know they're not here, and I'm not asking you to speculate on their mindset, but it did strike me a little bit of interest that, you know, they I mean, this sounds like a law school problem, one of which I long since emerged from and hoped that I would never see again. And God bless America, on February the 7th, to be here in collateral mortgages when I thought I had escaped that. But at any event, you have the luck, the three of you have drawn something that I haven't seen in a while, and that's three Louisiana judges on this panel. So any bit, right or wrong, you know, we'll reemerge. But all that is not a question. It's just a quandary, because it does sound like a law school proposition, frankly, in terms of what's theoretically problem. And we have the baseline proposition going back to McDuffie versus Walker, which I still remember, about the public records doctrine. So I'm still trying to understand.
Well, Your Honor,
there does seem to be some tension between the argument you're making about the multiple mortgage indebtedness, which sounds realistic, but the notion of recording in the public records to where a third party, without knowing all this through a phone call, would know, you know, their problem. And that core principle still seems to be there. And I'm just struggling with trying to reconcile that with what you're saying, this multiple mortgages indebtedness methodology in practice operates, but I just still don't understand how it satisfies the public records doctrine that counsel opposite has as a bedrock part of the objection.
Your Honor, it does, because it's recorded a public record for all persons to see, properly done, properly filed, as the bankruptcy judge noted. But secondly, Judge, the language, we're not changing all mortgages and payoffs. This is no different. 50 years ago, when you had a mortgage on your house and you were 15 years into your loan, somebody still had to call the bank to get a payoff. The payoff of your mortgage is not a public record. No mortgage payoff is a public record, because payments continue to be made on a monthly basis. So necessarily that debt's going to change. So, Judge, there's nothing new about the fact that you've still got to call the bank to get a payoff. That's always been the case and always will be the case.
But
there's
it's
no
only
filing.
The payoff on the mortgage that, based on the loan that's recorded, is you're also, you've added some to this Mississippi mortgage, and that's the rub.
Yes, sir, it is the rub, and that's what exactly they intended to do, and that's what the purpose of multiple indebtedness mortgages are. That's the purpose of it, to secure lenders for loans, broad loans. It's purposeful language. The language of the mortgage is purposeful, to include not just debts to this individual, but debts to others with whom they're liable on a joint and several and solidary basis.
What do you do with counsel opposite's argument saying that, well, Mr. Bueller guaranteed this, but Mr. Arm didn't? I mean,
Your Honor, I would ask the court to take note of the language in the acknowledgement, which completes the circle, tracks the language of the multiple indebtedness mortgage. Grantor is Harry Arm. Borrower, Mississippi Hospitality. Lenders, First Guaranty Bank. Grantor, Harry Arm, agrees that grantor, Harry Arm, shall remain liable, together with borrower, Mississippi Hospitality, in any and all guarantors, endorsers, and surety of the indebtedness, which is the Mississippi Hospitality note, it's cross-pledged, on a joint and several or solidary basis. You can be no clearer than make a statement that says, I agree to be bound with Mississippi Hospitality on this note on a joint and several and solidary basis. How else do you say that? That completes the loop and tracks the language of the mortgage, which says this mortgage secures loans not just to Harry Arm, but debts of others with whom Harry Arm is liable on a joint and several and solidary basis. So that's what completes the loop. It's the acknowledgement that completes the loop. There was a question raised about consent, and is all of this done with the consent of Harry Arm? Well, it's the record shows that Mr. Sam Bueller is the sole member, the sole manager, 100% owner of Harry Arm. He's the only person to sign things for Harry Arm, and he signed everything for Harry Arm. And the company, Harry Arm, signed by Mr. Bueller, presented to the bank the limited liability company resolution to borrow grant collateral. And it says, at a meeting of members of the company duly called and held on April 21st, 2009, which is the date that these documents were done, at which a quorum was present voting and other duly authorized action in lieu of a meeting, the resolutions were adopted. Mr. Sam Bueller, the member, his signature, any one of the authorized persons listed above may enter into any agreements of any nature with lender, and those agreements will bind the company. The agreement signed by Mr. Sam Bueller on behalf of Harry Arm will bind the company.
Okay. I mean, what I'm gathering is that the main opposition is that you can't use that unrecorded acknowledgement to complete the loop. What do you say to that?
I don't need that to complete the loop. I need it to complete the loop, but it all ties back to the mortgage, Judge. It's the same reason why it's a future advance mortgage. It contemplates, the language of the mortgage itself contemplates future loans.
Okay.
That's what's bargained for. So, Your Honor, yes, there are going to be future loans in the advance. And as pointed out again in the Walensic article and in the code articles, bless you, that all of this ties back and gives retroactive ranking. All of those advances gives retroactive ranking as of the date the mortgage is filed.
Yeah.
And that's the...
And what do you say to the argument that this doesn't meet the required formalities for surety?
Well, I think all it requires under the solidary article is a clear expression of intention. And how clear do you get when you say, I agree to be liable, I, Harry Arm, agree to be liable with Mississippi Hospitality on the Mississippi Hospitality note on a joint and several and solidary basis. That's as good as lawyers, I think, can get to create that solidary liability, Judge. It's the plain meaning, ordinary reading of the documents. It all ties together.
No, nobody would know that by looking at the public records that the mortgage in Slidell secures Harry Arm's personal liability on a future loan, does he?
At the language of the mortgage says that, Judge.
Mortgage says that.
Yes, sir, there should be a big buyer beware. Every time there's a multiple indemnity mortgage that's recorded a public record, there should be a big buyer beware. Read the document because it is broad, it's intentionally broad, and it secures these future advances. It does, Judge. That's why it's set up.
To Harry Arm.
And any debt for which Harry Arm is liable on a joint and several or solidary basis. And that's where the acknowledgement kicks in. That completes the circle. That's the acknowledgement, Your Honor.
But does the mortgage say on any debt that he's personally liable?
Yes, sir. The mortgage says, the language of the mortgage, the term indebtedness, under the definition of indebtedness. The word indebtedness includes that particular promissory note being signed that day, and any and all amendments thereto, substitutions therefore, renewals, extensions, refinancing, as well as any and all other obligations, including without limitation, any other agreement, whether now existing or hereafter arising, whether secured or unsecured, whether mortgagor is obligated alone or with others on a solidary or joint and several basis, as a principal obligor, as a surety, guarantor, or endorser of every nature and kind whatsoever. That is intended to be broad, Judge. It's admittedly, that's the bargain that banks have when they make loans, these commercial loans, these multi-million dollar loans.
Yeah. And you're saying that in principle and in practice, this works the same way the old collateral mortgage system worked?
Yes, sir. And again, as Mr. Walensky points out, the fiction of the collateral mortgage note and the collateral pledge agreement, it was hard sometimes for Louisiana lawyers to get it, but we had explained to out-of-state lawyers, it was difficult to explain. We would sometimes joke that collateral mortgage process was the Louisiana Lawyers Job Security Act because they would have to hire Louisiana lawyers to do that. So this simplifies it. It really kicked Louisiana into...
Is this multiple mortgage statute modeled after other state statutes, or is it...
I don't know, Judge. I don't know. Others, Mississippi, for example, has deeds of trust. Others have maybe a different method, but I don't know. I'm happy to address any question Your Honors have. I believe that I've covered all of the points that I would wanted to make. I would submit that Judge Brown was correct in his reasoning and ask this court to please affirm the decision of the bankruptcy judge in all respects.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Thornhill, we're back to you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be brief. This court has recognized the four corners rule that one interprets a mortgage only by looking at the mortgage or within the four corners of the mortgage. And I'm not so sure that our brief gave to you this citation, so once again, let me offer it to you. It's a 1993 case called the CRILO, K-R-I-E-L-O-W, versus Union Texas Petroleum Corporation. That case recognizes that one cannot go to other sources of information outside of the four corners of the mortgage to try to determine the intent of the parties. In Louisiana, as this court recognizes in CRILO, we have a parole evidence rule. We basically say the mortgage is the law between the parties and it governs the relationships and that which is contemplated. One can't, in this case, quite simply speaking, square that rule with the concepts being proposed by First Guaranty Bank. Because First Guaranty Bank says, I have an unrecorded, not authentic, not signed by the bank, the parties, two witnesses, and a notary, instrument, which is vague on its face, does not include a promise to pay from Harry Ong, is not in the form required for a suretyship, is not a guarantee, is not recorded to give notice to third parties, which in this case, everybody is. Harry Ong, Beulah, and everybody involved is a third party. And then they want to say, we can therefore, with this language in this document, which is not recorded and doesn't meet the form for any of the requirements of suretyship and mortgage, change that which is in the mortgage. The mortgage does not say anything about third-party debts, and we all know the rules on securing third-party obligations. They're very simple, and they've been consistent throughout. The clear promise must be made. There's nothing in this acknowledgement that's a clear promise to pay. I submit to you that at best, there's a vague argument that can be asserted that the acknowledgement affects an amendment of the mortgage, but that requires an authentic act and it requires recording. But with respect to third parties, the Civil Code article is very, very clear. So the argument of the bank is that there was a modification in some way of the mortgage. Impossible under the rules, I submit to you. The argument of the bank is that there was a joinder in the obligation of Mississippi Hospitality to pay, i.e., a promise to pay the debt of a third person. Impossible to have a suretyship or a guarantee that is not an authentic form. It is simply an impossibility under the rules. If one allows, and I say this with all due respect to my friend Judge Brown, if one allows this interpretation of the law to stand, we've turned Louisiana securities devices law up on its head. We've suddenly said, ignore the rules of third parties, ignore the 3295 that requires a specific written obligation that is in authentic form and recorded to effect an in rem obligation to secure the obligation of a third party. We've ignored that. And I don't think by referring to a new statute that was intended to bring ease of administration with respect to collateral mortgages law, if you will, one can create laws and rights that didn't exist before that directly conflict with the traditions and principles that we've practiced law and security devices and mortgages are made for hundreds of years. I submit to you that this issue is very clear. And I submit to you that with all due respect to Judge Brown, his decision, where he asked you to take a look at it because he says he's trying to fill in the gaps that don't exist or that are not clear. The reference to a law review article, Mr. Walenzik, that First Guaranty Bank brings, I went to LSU Law School. I took security devices from Mike Rubin. I got to tell you, this is simply not what Mr. Walenzik says. He does not say in there that promises to pay the obligations of third parties need not be in writing and clear, that one can say some in some waiver section of an acknowledgement that there is an obligation to pay created. This is not a first-party obligation. It's not an in personam obligation. It's not a suretyship. It's not a guarantee. It's not an amendment to the mortgage. And it's not recorded. So with respect to these bankruptcy issues, it's a non-issue. I submit reversal is appropriate. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for both sides for your briefing and oral argument. This concludes the